Thanks, Lee. Thanks, everybody, for showing up early this morning. 9 o'clock is early for me, too, so I appreciate you coming by. As Lee said, I'm Howard Ginsberg. I work in a pretty neat group at CNN, CNN Technology Group. We're responsible for bringing new technologies to CNN, not only here in Atlanta, but throughout our bureaus and offices worldwide. My background is in broadcast engineering, and fortunately, I was chosen to lead a group of people about 4 years ago in transitioning our production facilities from tape to digital server, both acquisition right through playout on air and archiving. So this morning, we're going to talk a little bit about what we're doing at CNN in regards to solving the problem of constantly having to deal with tape, a very linear format, a very bulky format, and a format that we have to use in real time, which nobody likes to talk about very much. What we've done to solve it had a lot of positives, a few negatives, and a tremendous amount of challenges, very developmental project. So we'll talk a little bit about the developmental challenges and our approach to a solution. You know, I was thinking last night about just how difficult the solution was, and then I realized we basically built a fairly large TiVo here in Atlanta. Excuse me, personal video recorder. We had a pretty good project plan, a few off-ramps that we hadn't anticipated, but we were able to get back on, and we were able to deploy it successfully here in Atlanta and a much larger scale installation at our new facilities we built earlier this year up in New York City. And it's an extensible project, so we are building a big proof of concept between Atlanta and New York, which we do plan on rolling out in other bureaus around the world. I'll give you an update on the current status, and I'll just give you a quick summary of where we are right now and some of the things we concluded through the project. So CNN's a fairly large organization, a very competitive environment today, more so today than just yesterday. And we have a lot of old material, or material that goes back now 22 years plus in our archive, which is largely a tape archive. And we have a ton of reporters and field crews around the world. I tried to get an update on the number yesterday, and the number changes a lot, somewhere in the order of 2,000 crews outside. A lot of material coming here into Atlanta and into our bureaus as well. So we acquire this material, footage, whatever, from around the world, and we have to produce it to be able to play it out on air. And we need to move now these facilities from not only analog to digital, but from tape to server-based facilities, what we call file-based operations. One of the real challenges that the broadcast industry's seen that's really helped move material a lot faster in the last 10 years is moving from a linear base. What I mean by linear is a tape-based format. You know, things are done in a linear fashion. They're laid out on tape in a linear fashion. You want to go to a specific spot on that tape, you've got to fast forward or rewind to that specific point on the tape. That takes a lot of time as well. Doesn't seem that way when you're just sitting in front of a tape machine, maybe, but as we all know, it's much easier if you can click on a specific time and go right to it and call up your footage. And you start adding that up, not only here in our production facilities in Atlanta, but in our bureaus, and you start realizing that there's a lot of time to be saved. We call it the nonlinear environment. We've now moved from going in a very linear fashion, a very serial fashion, to specific areas on the footage. And we're able to, therefore, edit and then transfer that material at a faster than real-time rate, depending upon available bandwidth, available circuits around the world as well. And, you know, up until just a couple of years ago, it was done in real time, very normal play speed. So today we're able to move, you know, a 30-minute package between New York and Atlanta in about 2 minutes versus 30 minutes of real time. That's a significant competitive advantage and a significant time advantage as well internally for us. What that's also done for us is given us the ability to move a lot more material as well. We can obviously move 15 packages in 30 minutes if we're moving in 30 minutes over a two-minute period of time. And we also have reduced the time to air for our material, which is important to us not only in the competitive environment, but people want the news as quick as they can get it. Otherwise, we should call it olds, not news, right? So that's what we're trying to do, is get the material to air as fast as possible in the nonlinear environment, and moving from tape to digital has definitely helped us do that. And it's also improved our access to the archive media. That's a tremendously manual process. You truly call up or put in a request for a librarian who pulls up the tape, pulls out the tape for you. Now, the tape is not necessarily on site. We run out of space in Atlanta. A lot of the tapes are off site in Atlanta, so it could take sometimes as much as a day to get a piece of material, and that's just doesn't cut it in the news business anymore. So we've taken steps in the tape environment to make that happen in a lot less time, but it's nothing like pulling up an archive package from an archive server, which may be on digital tape, having a robot put onto a staging server and then call it up into our production server. Some of that's still in development for wide deployment, but we also have to go back and now archive all our tape footage from years ago. We're the support of those tape machines is getting increasingly more difficult. Finding parts and people even that know the technology to maintain those tape machines are hard to find today. So we've got all these tapes in Atlanta and in bureaus around the world, and we've got to get these tapes ingested, not only to save the material, but also to be able to bring it to air quicker. And it's also a separate business for CNN. We have other businesses called News Source and Image Source, where we actually sell this footage. We sell, you know, it's a lot of it's licensed, so we're able to capitalize on it, frankly, and sell that material. So this is just a simple example, if you will, of some of the tape archives that exist. And we do have librarians that go up to the tape shelves here in Atlanta or in other facilities and find the tapes and bring them to the producers. Very, very manual and very, very time-consuming process. So I've already touched on a lot of these points, but we have to solve this WAT because we have just a tremendous amount of material, and it's growing a little bit out of proportion, actually a lot out of proportion now. So we want to make it simple to access the material. We have to make it manageable. Lee and I were talking briefly on stage before. Just I know in my personal life it's become great to have all this digital media available, video, pictures, and music files. But I find a tremendous amount of time being consumed in managing that material, and we find that in the professional workspace as well. Managing that material effectively, standardizing the management of that material, deploying the management of that material so that everybody understands it as standardized as you can get it, and then moving on to having people adapt to this new environment. We have a slide coming up here that shows a lot of the workflow, and we're going to get into some detail because that's what the system is built to support, is the existing workflow for production of news material at CNN. And obviously, a lot of what we do is to give us some sort of competitive edge. We don't mean to profess that we're doing things differently or better than anybody else in the industry, but we do try to leverage as much as we can out of the technology for the competitive edge. The move for CNN to digital servers is not new. We've been doing it for several years. About 8 or 9 years ago, we moved all our commercial playback to digital servers. It was a very linear process, somewhat roboticized, but fairly manual process as well, and a little bit laborious. We could use that talent for other purposes within the facility rather than loading tapes and playing them back on the air. So we moved into this fairly gingerly as far as getting material to air from servers, and now we're producing the material as well on the servers. So what we formed about 4 years ago was a program called the Integrated Production Environment. And the Integrated Production Environment is summed into these five sub-bullets here. Media Asset Management, we talked about that in terms of just what we do sometimes in trying to manage our digital files on our laptops, our music files, our if we try to manage those files. That's a big issue, very, very big issue at CNN. There's a tremendous amount of metadata and cataloging data around all the media that comes into the building. And it gets very granular. Today we can not only, you know, to identify the camera, we identify not only the reporter, we identify the location of the camera, a lot of time-based information, and a lot of textual information about all this material being acquired in the field. And that material comes along with the content. We have to manage that material throughout the process. So it's just not managing video and audio files at CNN. It's managing all the metadata, all the information about the information. And I would say from my experience in the last 4 years, that's probably been the most difficult area to solve, keeping the media information and the metadata managed throughout the process. It's and I think not a day goes by where we find there's not areas we necessarily missed, but areas that we could do a better job in terms of making that information available quicker. Sometimes they want that information. In fact, most times I would say they want that information quicker than the media content or what we call the essence. We also have here's my TiVo example, the ingest recording part of what we do. That's a very automated process. We know there are X amount of feeds that come in every day, and we can go ahead and schedule those feeds at 10 o'clock every day. There's a press conference at this certain location at the United Nations. We can schedule that ahead. We don't need to have somebody manually put a tape in a tape deck and press record at 10 a.m. And we have some scheduling tools we use for that. They're deployed and accessible through our internet for both New York and Atlanta, so I can sit here in Atlanta and schedule a recording in New York and vice versa. And all this looks like to the operators just a pool of what we still call encoders, but what they are ingest ports or ports to record on the server. And you know, in New York, at any one time, they have 37 available. In New York, or rather in Atlanta right now, we have somewhat less, but we're looking to scale to somewhere around 50 of those. And the managing of that can become a very tedious task for human. Obviously, we can let the automated scheduling tools go ahead and manage those, and they do it very, very well. We look far and wide. We wrote the specification requirements for these tools internally. We looked far and wide for a vendor to fulfill it, and we actually did find a vendor that had done a very small-scale project in Sweden that very much met our requirements. And fortunately, it's worked out very well. That it's a package that they rolled out on a very small, sort of a microcosm of what CNN does on an internal network in Sweden, and we were able to deploy it in Atlanta and New York, and it's worked out very well for us. So we schedule these recordings way in advance, and we can schedule them repetitively, but as part of the scheduling process, the operators can enter a tremendous amount of information and log the incoming video as it's occurring. They can timestamp it. You know, somebody said such and such at this point in time, and that information as it travels through the system is very useful, as you'll see when we get to the slide on our production workflow. Then we produce the material. What does production mean? Well, you've seen maybe video editing on your laptop or possibly videotape recorders in the past, and we've been using nonlinear tape editing or nonlinear computer editing for over 10 years now. And there's a tremendous amount of competitors to the solution that we're using for this specific project. And we use all of them at CNN. It's really, we don't necessarily marry up to a specific vendor for a specific purpose, which is great for the industry. We do have a lot of strategic relationships where because we have some pretty good ideas of how news should be handled when you have so many field crews bringing in information overseas, you can adapt that to the local level. So we help develop a lot of these products with major vendors, and we pick the products that meet the specific needs within the organization. We play out to air now from these servers, and we also archive with these servers as well. The play out to air was a great demonstration of giving people tools that they're very skeptical about and then realizing how quickly they've adapted to it. We had planned when we first started playing out to air, backing up and playing out simultaneously from tape, because they're always scared that things wouldn't play out. And they had planned about a 3-month transition time where that would exist. Well, after about 2 days, they said, we don't need the tape anymore. It was very reliable for them. They got the material to air faster. In fact, it was more reliable. It didn't tapes break on the air. People accidentally hit the stop button while it's playing on the air. It's a lot more controllable in the play out environment. So play out proved itself early on as a real good tool for getting material to air. And of course, archiving. Now, archiving for CNN is a huge challenge because we have so much material from the last 24 plus years now on tape. And it's still coming in, a lot of it on tape. And that material is still being brought in the production environment on tape because it's a real-time process to ingest it. And towards the end of this presentation, we'll show you a little bit about the archiving. It's a very laborious process. We have 17 or 18 stations set up where they truly play back in real time this material and ingest it into the digital archive. And we estimate that's going to take another 4 or 5 years at the soonest to have that all that material available to us. And in the meantime, we still have a lot of new material coming in on tape, and we're archiving, of course, from the digital acquisition as well. I like to call this moving from atoms to bits, moving from digital or videotape, analog videotape being the atoms, if you will, the physical media, to bits, which doesn't have a lot of physical media now to the operator to have to deal with. We've moved from videotape to files, and we've built this to support a facility that we believe is 24/7 forever. Just to give you an idea of some of the amount of information that we store, and this is strictly for the video and audio essence, 1 hour of digital video, 25 DV25 video, 4 channels of uncompressed audio, and 6 lines of uncompressed vertical blanking. Some of you may be familiar at the top of your screen. There's a fair amount of information buried in what we call the vertical interval. That information is preserved in an uncompressed environment for playback as well. If you compress it, you tend to lose a lot of that information. So approximately 14 gigabytes of disk space is required for an hour of media. And that's about 350 gigabytes per day in terms of what we acquire in Atlanta. We also have a proxy media. We use a low-resolution version maybe for desktop viewing and editing, and we'll talk about a lot of that in a few minutes. And that's an MPEG-1 file, and for that same 1 hour, it's about a gigabyte of information, so roughly 22 gigabytes per day, and that's for one incoming feed. For editing, we use both high-resolution broadcast-quality video, a lot of analysis done on what formats we would use, and we do plan to extend the system to multi-formats. Right now, it's built as a DV25 system. We are looking, of course, at moving it into high-definition as well. And we also do low-resolution editing, which is a tool that really has enabled our editing process. We'll talk about that in a few minutes, quite a bit more. And the file transfers, talked about that a few minutes ago, in terms of getting this information back and forth and faster than real time, taking a 30-minute piece of media from Atlanta's archive and transferring it in a couple of minutes to New York is a tremendous advantage when we move from atoms to bits rather than playing it out in real time. Acquisition, moving into optical media, that's happening certainly in the consumer marketplace, has been for years, and we're starting to use that as well. So a lot of the information coming into us is starting to come in digitally right now. Certainly, where Atlanta tends to be more of a satellite-based operation with feeds coming in real time now, data being transferred in faster than real time. But you go to our bureaus in New York or Chicago or any major city around the world, most of that media actually comes in on physical media, or most of the information of physical media used to be videotaped. Now it's starting to be optical, so of course we can bring that media into the server at a lot faster than real-time rate. And that gives us the ability to get the information to air sooner and also maintain the quality, in fact, increase the quality in some ways. File transfer back and forth to the archive, not only in Atlanta, the archive being built in Atlanta can support other bureaus and will, but certainly for Atlanta's advantage, rather than going through this physical process of people looking up the tape, physically going to find the tape, whether it be on-site or off-site here in Atlanta, and getting that tape to the editor or the tape producer to view, it's much easier if they can do it right at the desktop and pull up that file. And that is definitely being used now on a very small scale and where this is going for us. And, of course, transfer of that media to other locations. We talked about that. Again, big proof of concept, Atlanta, New York right now, very laborious development project, if you will. The travel is fairly reasonable between Atlanta and New York, rather than have to go Atlanta to Hong Kong to troubleshoot a problem or get people trained. So once we get this to a point that we feel it's extensible around the world, we'll find that we'll be doing a lot more file transfers to our bureaus around the world as well. So the pros, we've talked about a lot of these, so I'll probably go through this slide pretty fast and get to some of the pictures. Media available prior to completion of recording, that's a big issue. On videotape, you had to wait till that recording was done, or you could slice up the recording. On a press conference, typically you'd roll multiple videotapes for the whole press conference because you would need to use that in multiple edit bays. In CNN's case, we version a lot of material for all of our international networks, headlines, versions for Headlines US and CNN US as well. Then we version for CNN Espanol as well. So we would roll a lot of copies of tapes, and you would cut up those press conferences because as soon as that press conference, for instance, was over, you would want to roll some of that information on air. So if it happened in the first 5 minutes and you had to wait for that 30-minute press conference to end to get the tape, you would have to go back 25 minutes, and that's a time-consuming process. And of course, in the digital world, as soon as we start acquiring it, and I say as soon as, usually in about 3 seconds time, which is soon enough for us, we can get that material and start editing it as well. That's a tremendous advantage. New York, when they were looking at rolling the system out, were very concerned about getting the material that fast. They said they just didn't think it was possible. Today, you couldn't take those tools away from them. That material's coming in, and they're editing it so quickly as it's coming in. So it's really given us the ability to get the material to air a lot faster as well. And we also use that for playout delay, not frequently, but we have the ability. If it's coming in, we need to delay it. We used to put it through these hardware devices, which would delay it for 5 or 8 seconds on the air. And they're very expensive, moving the analog video and digital, buffering it, and then sending it back out. Today, we simply record it to the server, and we start playing it back at whatever time we want to start playing it back. We don't use that a lot, but there may be times we would want to use that, and we do have that ability. It's very difficult for us to misplace media in this world. If we have the CNN ID and at least a piece of information about so-and-so's press conference, we can find the piece of media. It's very easy to lose those videotapes. Internally, we use a newsroom information system, and I'd say probably 60% of the posts are people looking for media that's been misplaced, physical media. We don't have that problem in the digital world. They look it up. They find the slug. They search it by slug. They find the ID, and they call that ID up on whatever editing tool they're using. The media is shared as well. We talked earlier about videotapes having to roll 6 or 8 copies simultaneously. We don't do that in the digital world. We may use a couple of encoders to ingest the video because you can have a hardware failure on an encoder during an important record, so we'll ingest it multiple times. But that media can be shared and is always shared at this point. And the media's version, we touched on that. The media versioning is a huge issue for us. We do I was told a couple of weeks ago, versioning has actually decreased a little bit, and there was no reason really given for it, but typically it's 4 to 6 versions of any news package. Any produced piece you see in the background where the live is not on the screen, typically they do 4 to 6 pieces of that for the various networks. And then I also include some of the web networks now. So media being versioned is much easier in this digital environment. And we talked a lot about this earlier, faster and more flexible acquisition and production distribution of the news and information. That goes along very much with this environment. And the media faster than real time. You hear me talk about that a lot. That's a huge advantage. And the other pros are the technology advancements we're able to leverage. Increasing speed improves the workflow and productivity. This is not about losing people. I think our production people will tell you the environment continues to grow because we're able to acquire more information. That information needs to be processed and edited and put out on the air. And while we may be taking one network off the air, we typically are putting another one on in some format, whether it be television or web-based. So increasing the amount of information coming in and increasing the speed gives the folks the tools necessary. We give the folks the tools necessary to enable the workflow to produce a lot more for air. Faster trial file transfers again, and cost versus performance. I hate to use the cliche, but it's a no-brainer for us. The physical media is extremely expensive. Not only just the physical tape machines, which typical broadcast quality VTR runs $15,000 to $20,000. You can build a lot of server for $15,000 to $20,000 for just ingesting one piece of material. So it enables a tremendous amount of cost versus performance. Very easy to justify. Some things that we've run into in developing this project was not a lot of industry data or information, certainly not a lot of sharing of that information. It's opening up a little bit more now, not for competitive reasons, but in terms of scale, this was a big issue for CNN. At scale, reference architectures were very difficult. In fact, they were impossible to locate. So we went through about a year and a half process with the major vendors in the industry, Sony, certainly Pinnacle Systems, Avid Technology, Leech, Grass Valley, and a few others. And we looked at different reference architectures. We looked at building our own, rolling our own system. And the at-scale architectures to do real-time broadcast quality video at the data rates you saw before and store it and have it come back and not lose frames on the air so you don't see black was very difficult for folks to do. So we had a very difficult time locating those architectures, and actually we ended up designing our own based on a whole host of architectures we saw, and then we went through another round with the vendor, say, hey, if we build this, what are the implications for you, and what do you feel from your feedback strategically in the field for these types of systems? and our deployment timescale versus all these technology improvements. When we started designing the system, it's a much different system than it appeared today, and we're now scaling these systems far beyond what they were anticipated to be in the first place. But we have the benefit of certainly faster processing, and we want to maintain some backwards compatibility as well, because we have bus architectures and form factors and some physical limitations within the facilities that we have to deal with. Not a huge issue, but it's still an issue that we have to deal with, if anything, for supportability. And that's a very important part of this project. You can't constantly retrain people, but by the same token, you have to leverage the technologies as well. So these, just so you know, too, this video server is a Windows-based system. It's currently Windows 2000, and as a result, we tend to see a lot of these on a system. No, we actually don't, and it's been a very, 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 very powerful system for us. It's in fact, I had a hard time finding that slide on this system. We couldn't. We had to find it elsewhere. So the challenges we are still facing today is moving our existing workflow. And when I mean workflow, I mean acquiring the media, producing it, playing it out on the air, and archiving it, and maintaining all that metadata throughout it. Like I said before, not a day goes by where we don't run into some speed bump where we, as much as we plan and as much information we acquired on and how we would move this content and metadata along, we still find that there's glitches in the system. So we're constantly going through an improvement process on the system. We maintain our quality on the air. We try to minimize generational changes. We've been dealing with that in videotape for years. So the broadcast industry calls it transcoding, but we do a fair amount of format-to-format conversion rather than go back to analog and then go back to digital within the facility. And we utilize IT and IP technology in the real-time video and production workflow, as you'll see in some of the diagrams coming up. Talk about leveraging technology. The workflow enhancements are tremendous to us, strictly in time. If you just take time alone and then you start adding the physical media, taking that out of the equation and dealing with calling up files, that information being available so much quicker to the operator is a tremendous advantage to our operation. And as I said earlier, a small number of users worldwide at these scales. We saw a lot of small systems, you know, maybe 5 edit stations and 3 ingest ports, and those are very typical in local news operations. And they worked great, but we knew we'd have tremendous problems when we try to scale the system to the size we anticipate. When the system moves into its next phase, it'll be storing approximately 1,600 hours of high-res video. That's a 28-terabyte server in real time with all these clients hitting it, again, so we don't play back any black frames on the air. And those small-scale systems were very easy to do 5 years ago and 10 years ago, but moving them into what we had to do, and we'll show you some of the scale we're operating at shortly, was a very big challenge for CNN. It took up most of that year and a half with these vendors in terms of trying to solve that major issue. We didn't want to have to copy this media a lot, even though it was faster than real time. We had copied tapes for so many years. They wanted to take that element out of the workflow process. Again, it would be faster than real time, but still would take time, where we knew if we ingested it into the server, it was immediately available. Why wait even a couple of minutes for it? So we took that out of the equation, and we had to build this at a large scale. And ubiquitous access to all the material without copying. They didn't want to have to hunt it down in several different servers or several different volumes or directories on other servers. So that was one of the major requirements for the facility. Sustaining our operations 24/7, media asset management, archiving, security of the system is huge for us. The system is connected between Atlanta and New York, and as you'll see when I get to the diagrams, I'll point these out. There are areas where these systems are combined with other systems, so the other systems can easily have security disadvantages that ultimately end up affecting us on air. We need to mitigate those. We think we've done a pretty good job at that. I can't tell you all of the ways we did that, but I can give you some ideas of some of the technologies we looked at. And we wanted to use standard IP and IT technologies for the media acquisition and production and format, because people were fairly understanding of that and increasingly. So we wanted to, like I said, we have an automated acquisition tool that's web-based, and folks are very familiar with the tools they already had on their web browser, so we were able to leverage those tools for scheduling and automation, and they adapted to that very quickly. and we had to integrate this with other existing systems and stay on the air at the same time and not find ourselves not being able to play back material on air because it wasn't available. Certainly that would have been looked at as a big negative. Maintaining backward compatibility in the system with operating systems and applications, configurations, hardware, system architectures, bus architectures, that was certainly a challenge, continues to be a challenge, probably will always be a challenge. Maintaining forward compatibility, optical disc acquisition versus tape. There are a lot of the file formats being used on tape now, very similar to the file formats for optical acquisition as well, and we want the ability to use both. We can't be we can't be format dependent, and we can't be media dependent either, because we will find ourselves boxed into a corner very quickly. And leveraging the system for high definition television. While we've learned a lot in this system in terms of workflow and technology, the system is not built to be a high definition supported system. But we've learned a lot that we feel this will scale. And we can scale not only this system, but we can look at other very similar architectures, workflow architectures, and technology architectures for adapting this to high-definition television. And we want to always minimize throwaway technology and costs in the tape world. That's a huge expense. In the hardware world, it's very difficult to justify throwing out a $30,000 server or $500,000 worth of storage. And we also had broadcast equipment manufacturers making the media in the past. If you bought a Sony VTR, you would buy Sony media because Panasonic didn't make media. You might be able to find TDK media. And this breaks that mold. And these manufacturers will tell you that was their bread and butter and their gravy together, having the media available, selling that media, as well as the hardware. So they're adapting to this new world as well on, if you will, the other side of the table. We want to make sure that we don't become not only manufacturer-dependent, but media-dependent in the system. And a mindset change when we move from atoms to bits, from physical media and to bits and even to optical disc acquisition. We have to have that media compatibility and that format compatibility. I'm going to come back and talk a little bit more about the project phases in just a bit, but I wanted to get to the workflow diagram because pictures always tell a lot more than the words. Just gives you an idea of what we're doing at the facility. I talked a little earlier. I'm sorry for the folks on the other side. I didn't realize there were two screens. I'll try to go slow here. But this is generally the ways we acquire the material. Video files coming into our facility now. Satellite feeds can be either video or data streams now, and they're frequently video over data streams, and physical tape getting adjusted into the feeds edit servers right here in the center of our world, if you will. We have this automated ingestion tool where we can schedule any of these. Video tape tends to not be scheduled. You'll typically have a tape put into a machine, but there's still a tool necessary for the operators to ingest that material so they can at least enter the metadata. And I talked about metadata a lot earlier. We have I'm sorry if this is a little fuzzy, we call it automated metadata extraction. A lot of information comes available in that vertical interval I was telling you about. That's where your closed captioning material is. That's great material for us on an incoming feed that has it. We convert that obviously to text, and maybe not so obviously we convert it to text, and we log that and catalog that information so it's searchable and it's very usable in the facility. Speech to text tools used much more often now as well at the facility. So that's part of the automated metadata extraction, and that is captured as part of the incoming feed. And we also have librarians, if you will. We call them catalogers now, actually logging the incoming media. As I mentioned earlier, they may be watching. That used to happen after the package was produced, when they were actually archiving the tape. Well, by doing that, it was great information for archival purposes to retrieve, but you've lost all that information throughout your production workflow. So we brought a lot of that up front in the operation now. In the acquisition world, where we acquire the material, we have stations set up. They're watching it in real time. And if it doesn't have speech-to-text capabilities or it doesn't have the closed captioning, which I would say is a small percentage of it, they are logging that material in real time as it's coming in, time-stamping it, major changes in the video that may be coming in. They're logging when that occurs. And that information is used when that piece of material gets to the edit booth. We also, as I mentioned earlier, have a low-resolution or proxy version of the incoming video. That's really enabled our editing process by a large amount. It's a lot less expensive for us to deploy the proxy editors. And I can proxy edit in New York over a very low bandwidth connection on material sitting on a server here in New York. While it can be done, it's very expensive to do that in the high-res world. A high-res desktop editor is, you know, $40,000 or $50,000. A proxy editor can be, you can use consumer tools if you want to edit that material. What you're really looking for is, coming out of that tool is a what we call an EDL, or edit decision list, that tells us what video to use, how to affect transitions, how to make effects and transitions, and then transport that information into a high-res editor, can still pull up that high-res video at those same timestamps and then recreate those transitions and effects and produce the broadcast quality material. Very easy to deploy the proxy editors, and we've done that, and it really enabled the New York system. And that much like I was telling you earlier, where we had this play out to air and we cut down that 3-month time where we were going to be on tape and server operations, same thing happened in New York. We put the system on air in April, and in about 2 weeks' time, folks were not clamoring for the high-res edit bays. They had these deployed on a wide scale on their desktop PCs, and they were able to screen video when it was being ingested. They were able to screen formerly edited material to be able to reversion it for another network, and they were able to edit the material as well there and play it out in real time from the high-res server on air. So that has truly enabled our workflow. It was a very educated guess it would. A lot of people didn't believe it, but that's one of the areas a lot of us in technology felt good that we deployed a new tool that was adapted to very quickly. And again, we have all these tools extracting and entering metadata, and that has to flow through not only our production process, which goes horizontally here, but also to our archive as well. So sitting at the core of this diagram is what we call the feed edit server. It's the high resolution broadcast quality unedited video. We call it raw in the business, the raw video coming in. And then that material is available to the editors, the desktop editors, laptop editors, whatever, deployed through the system. And it's also to these dedicated nonlinear, what we call craft editors in the business. Some of you may be familiar with some of the technologies from a lot of the companies. They're typically, you know, the hardware platforms are relatively inexpensive. What really enables them, obviously, are the software applications they've put on those tools. Much, much more craft-oriented that we were able to do with videotape in large edit suites we're now able to do on a couple of VGA monitors and fairly small edit booths. We hear this a lot. It's becoming very, very difficult to find editors that want to go back to tape or that are tape-only based. And we still use a lot of tape, so it's important to us to be able to find people and hire people that are still well-versed in tape editing. Most of them have adapted to the nonlinear world and have forgotten and don't want to go back to tape, but we still require that in the operation. So we have our dedicated nonlinear editors, and there's a fairly small amount of those, if you will. Just to give you an idea of the scales here, in Atlanta, we deploy about 25 of the nonlinear desktop editors. We deployed 100 of the desktop ones. And in New York, it's roughly 20 of the dedicated craft editors, and it's about 100 desktop editors in New York. It's a cost-performance situation. We are a news business, so we don't get into a lot of very fancy effects in most of our news production, but when you watch some of the shows, particularly on weekends or overnight, shows like CNN Presents or shows on the weekend like In the Money, those are produced in a post-production, what we call post-production environment, with tremendously enable tools that we don't want to lose in our regular news process, but we have to be a little bit cost conscious in here as well. So we've deployed, you know, a lot of the news packages you'll see, typically it's an anchor on the air talking over the video that's in the background. And if you watch that video closely, it's what we call cuts only. It's one piece and another piece. There's no transition between the pieces. It's cuts only. One piece back to back, spliced, if you will, together. And we can do that on a proxy editor very, very quickly. And then that proxy edit decision list is played out in real time by the high-res decoders. And I have a system diagram to show some of that information. So moving horizontally in the workflow, we've acquired the material. We're editing it. We have this edit decision list. And we have what we call a conforming engine. What we've done in this edit decision list has given us all the data necessary to take all the material from the raw packages and point to it and play it out in real time and create those effects in real time on the air. And today's technology allows us to do that. It's tremendously valuable. We can go ahead and, if you will, confirm that piece, and we do this frequently, we'll confirm that piece and save it back on the server because we may want to reversion it later on for another network, or we may want to archive it. So we don't always conform, but most of the time we do because it saves server space. We don't have to create these large flattened files. It may not seem a lot if these packages typically run 2 to 2.5 minutes, but when you look at it over a 24-hour period and 14 networks coming out of Atlanta, it adds up very quickly. So we just go ahead and say, play this edit decision list, and to the user on the air, it's a clip number. Clip number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. System looks it up, pulls up its edit decision list, and plays out all those pieces with all those effects in real time on the air, all the graphics superimposed. This is all going on in real time. If it's something that's extremely critical to them, typically they'll conform it, save it back to the server, and play it out because they don't want to take the chance potentially of the decoder crashing. But we don't see that a lot. I think most of the packages you see on the air, when I say most, I say at least 3/4 of them are conformed now in real time and played out in real time on the air rather than this flat file where it's really a two-minute or two-and-a-half-minute digital file playing out. The system is interconnected through a private network internally such that we can send this material out to servers that play it back directly on air. And we have servers that do that here in Atlanta. We have servers that do it in New York and now in most of our bureaus as well. We also have tools now where this information is available to our website. Some of you may subscribe to NewsPass. A lot of this material is versioned specifically for NewsPass. We don't play the because it's a MPEG-1 or a low bandwidth piece. We don't play the original feeds edit low bandwidth piece. We'll transcode that, like I mentioned earlier, do a format conversion from the high res. So it's the highest possible quality for the format you've chosen through NewsPass. We don't just go ahead and use our low res version of that video. So we enable that video to be played out, obviously, over the web as well. And we also sell, like I said, some of our footage as well through our news source and other affiliate operations. So a lot of that is accessible. Truly, you can enter your credit card on the internet, call up a piece, and you bought the rights to use that piece for a certain period of time, and that piece will transfer itself in a standard format for your use. And that's a big, I would say it's a huge business for CNN. Primarily our broadcast business it is, but it is a good piece of our business. You'll find a lot of corporations will see a piece about them on the air, and they'll want to save that for their own archival purposes or what have you. And or some folks may just want it personally, and they will actually purchase that piece from us. And they can do that over the web now as well. Then we also have our archive, which I don't know, Bill Lefebvre knows a lot more about than I do. To me, it's a large bucket of bits that happens to be video essence and metadata for our system. So again, very important to remember that metadata, the information about all that essence, extremely important to us. We have staging servers or nearline storage available, so information that may eventually end up in a tape-based archive or the deep archive, but we want to retrieve faster, may stay in the staging server for a period of time. But more importantly, the deep archive stuff coming back into the feeds edit server is staged first and then transferred, whether it be to the system here in Atlanta or in New York. And again, some of that information may need to be fulfilled to somebody actually purchasing it from one of our services. And we have this fulfillment and transaction engine to do that as well. So overall, this workflow is a very simplistic diagram. But it's cut a number of very, very laborious, extremely time-consuming processes out of getting video to air and reversioning the packages. And to go back to the tape world now, I don't think anybody, and I truly can say that is a very generalized statement. In our business, we want to go back to that tape environment, and they want to move more into this world, and we're seeing some of our other, if you will, smaller networks in CNN US wanting to increase their ability to use this system now because they've seen primarily the advantages of the being able to edit while it's still ingesting and then being able to edit it at their desktops as well, not having to wait for one of these craft editors, either the person to be available or the edit bay to be available. So this project actually started in 1997. That's when it was originally put in the technology plan for the facility. There was a lot of buzz about it in the industry. CDAN immediately could see how it could benefit the operations. But it took us almost 3 years to write the original requirements on this project. It's amazing in our facility how every day you learn there's new people involved in the process and new groups involved in the processes. And we want to capture all those requirements because these tools enable most of the businesses within CNN and Turner. So capturing those requirements is a long, long process. It's also a fun process because you have a group of people together doing these requirements, and you realize very quickly that none of us is as smart as all of us. There's so many ways we can solve this, and you really see the enthusiasm build as you go through the building of the requirements. So one group really leverages what another group's doing, and it turns into a far better system than any one or two people could plan on. But it was a long process. And then it took about a year and a half, and that was to go through with our vendors. We elaborated on those requirements, and we researched those requirements as well. And that happened in about 2000, 2001, in that time period. And that was a big issue, scaling being probably the top issue. Getting the scale necessary to meet all the other requirements. And the big requirements there was ubiquitous access to all that material immediately for all these users in New York and Atlanta on this specific project. Took about 6 months to get through the contract, a lot of requirements. We're actually negotiating a new version of this right now to enable more processes. And you get to all these bullet points, and the questions that get asked are very simple. What does this mean? And then all of a sudden it begets pages of more information because these are being developed by software developers, and they have to have that information, as you know better than I, up front necessary to get it right. So it takes quite a bit of time to get through those contracts. And then, of course, the construction and transition. Actually, in my opinion, those are actually the smallest pieces of this puzzle in terms of time. To give you an idea, we actually constructed this New York system. I'll show you a system diagram in a minute. It's 2 14-terabyte servers for the high-res playback. We constructed about 3 months, and then we tested. It took us about 3 weeks, fairly short period of time. We did a great job on the requirements. We had done some factory testing at scale, and we had to go ahead and build the system and deploy it and transition the operations. New York was actually easy for us to transition because we were moving into a new facility up there. Some of you may have read where CNN in New York moved into Time Warner Center, the new corporate headquarters in Columbus Circle. So it was easy for us to transition there because we're building a new facility. It's very difficult in Atlanta for us to just physically replace our facilities. You have obviously room requirements. You need to maintain your on-air facilities. So in New York, they're maintaining their broadcast facilities at a site down by Madison Square Garden, that was fine, and they could move in a brand new facility, fairly easy to build. The transition in Atlanta is taking us about a year to do that same piece that we did in New York in about 3 months' time. And I'd say we're about three quarters of the way through that. We expect approximately March or April of next year to have the transition complete here in Atlanta. Talked about some of the tools earlier. I'll go through this slide probably pretty quickly here. Multi-channel, automated, and scheduled ingest. New York, I have a pool of encoders, 37 encoders, 29 of which are dedicated for encoding material. So I have all those channels I can encode on. Atlanta ultimately will exceed that. I have the editing platform, high resolution and craft editors, low resolution proxy editors. I also have a proxy browse tool, simply a player. If I want to screen a piece of material, before it hits air, I want to find specific elements of it. I don't even need a proxy editor. I can use a very inexpensive player. I could use any of the number of them. We have specific players we use because we want to see that time code. So they tend to be at sort of the middle level of some of the consumer branded ones, but they've been modified for broadcast use. Play out to air. The media management that we're constantly doing here in the background, these servers are not unlimited access. It doesn't go on the con slide because nobody believes it's a drawback, but we have to manage this media because we don't have unlimited storage. Typically, these servers run somewhere between 60 and 90% full, and it depends. I always hate to bring this up when I give talks that, since September 11th, we don't like to think that we'll be always operating at full capacity, but we build these systems for that full capacity. and that set a new benchmark for us both in Atlanta and New York. But we also want to keep as much material available on these tools, so we constantly manage that media. We have folks dedicated to looking through the media, determining if it absolutely has to be on the server, if it's referenced in other media, if folks have put in information that says they have to hold this material for a certain period of time. And all this goes through the process on a narrowly basis, both in Atlanta and New York. They sit there and they go through that material and determine what can be archived and what needs to stay on the server. And usually they get it right. We have the catalog in the library. We're talking about 150,000 hours need to be ingested. That's about 1.5 million exclusive items. That's a lot of material. And the digital archive, which was at the bottom of that workflow diagram, which is our long-term storage of the individual items in that catalog. Estimated 5-year process. My opinion probably take a little bit longer than that because of the fact that we still have a lot of material that is coming in on tape, more than we had anticipated in all our planning. I'm going to show you a system diagram, but I want to give you an idea of the scale of our system. I mentioned Atlanta and New York earlier. This summarizes it. New York right now running 2 14 terabyte cores. They're not mirrored systems, they're dual systems. We parallel ingest, parallel playback on them. Two terabyte servers on each side of this dual system. And it gives us about 900 hours of broadcast quality video, and we expect in the first or second quarter next year to actually double that in New York. Atlanta is actually scaling right now to what New York will be. 2 28-terabyte high-resolution cores, 2 2-terabyte low-resolution cores. We call them media cores, kind of a ubiquitous term internally, and gives us the 1,800 hours of that DV broadcast quality video. Pretty major amount of high-performance storage. I'm sorry this doesn't show up as well as I had hoped it would, but I did want to give you an idea. When I talk about two cores, there's an imaginary line through the center of this diagram, and the two cores, if you will, two media cores, would exist probably, if I drew a circle, be around here, or an oval, and the same on the other side. What we have in that oval would be our proxy server, our 2-terabyte server for that MPEG-1 video, large network switch, and our actual media servers and disk storage here, and the same on the other side. As we move up this diagram, we'll see various devices. Right in this area here are our high-resolution encoders. I missed that one. The encoders actually are right here, for what it's worth. Those are right now 29 are dedicated in New York. We have the ability to actually use 8 of these decoding or playout devices as encoders. So I can have actually up to 37 devices parallel recording on both sides of this core. So this gives us not only a fault tolerance and redundancy, but it gives us the ability to upgrade the system while it's on air without sweating bullets, which is a huge issue for us. And then in the lower part here, we have our editors. Now, the editors actually edit only with material on one core or the other. And the reason we do this is because editors can actually collaboratively work on material. If you collaboratively work on material, if you think you're collaboratively working on material here, and you have one editor looking at it here, another one here, they're not working on the same material. So not being particularly collaborative, and they don't know it until they go to play out the video and say, hey, that's not what I meant it to do. So we actually have mapped all the editors to one server. We're able to do that because we have other devices I'll get to in a minute that keep these two cores coherent. If I should have an encoder or a connectivity problem or a switch problem where I haven't ingested the material here, I don't have my raw material available, it is available on the other core. And when this core would be returned to service, there are tools here that automatically copy that material over. If it's a short-term blip even, the file doesn't get closed. That system rescans once a minute, finds any media that exists on one server, not the other, and copies it over. It's been very reliable for us as far as keeping these two cores coherent. And in the case where you've lost an entire core, if necessary, you can't copy all that material over, although that can take a long time. But in the case of small problems like disk drives, these are multiple tiers of RAID 3 storage, so they're protected very, very well. And we have two of them online. So the editors are actually pointed to one core or the other. Typically, we have them mapped to what we our default map to what we call core A. And if that core should go down, we map it to the other one. So that's why the editors themselves can really
usually are only accessing one core, so we don't have this collaborative work going on different material. We want to keep them looking at the same material simultaneously. Some small boxes in here just are aggregation switches, so we have these editors on one floor in New York, and there's, 16 of them now, shortly be 20 up there, and we just send them over fiber trunks up to the server location on another floor. And on the bottom here, we have what we call media gateway servers. That's our ability to get the media in and out of the system, transfer the media from New York to Atlanta or Atlanta to New York. It can be used as an FTP server if you want for that material, for example. Some of our automated ingest tools sitting up here. I'm sorry, the blocks are blocked out. This is that scheduler I talked about. It's a timeline-based scheduler, so I can say, you know, I can just literally drag and drop for 1 hour from 10 to 11, open up another window. I can say, record this feed for this duration, give it a name, give it an ID number. That's the basic information. Hit OK, and the system will record it. And that information, I can build on that information while it's recording and save that information again, and the system automatically controls those encoders to ingest that material time. So we actually have multiple servers in there. So if that automated ingest tool failed, it goes to its backup. If I lost that whole system, I've got backup tools to that system. It's got to go through several levels of fault tolerance before somebody manually has to start a record on the system. Controlling 29 encoders is very easy with 4 or 5 people. Okay, if you have to go to manual control, when we were doing it with tape decks, typically you had one person assigned to 2 tape decks. Even though those feeds were only occurring maybe 30-minute feeds or 60-minute feeds coming in, there was a lot of information they were gathering behind those feeds. So it took up time as well. So they could only really be responsible for 2 tape decks. If we had to go back to that world today, well, I won't even say that, but CFO would not probably allow us to go back to that world with this amount of recording capability now. So we actually are able to control all those encoders with just a couple of people there, and we have several levels of fault tolerance or other systems that can control those encoders as well. And at the top, we have metadata management tools. We have high availability servers up there. They keep track of all the information about what's on the servers, not only just the standard metadata I mentioned earlier, but in terms of what information is on both cores, because I need to keep those two cores coherent. It also keeps track of those edit decision lists. It's a database of all those edit decision lists. So that information that exists in this block up top is extensible to other systems. I do transfer that information to what a system we call Media Source, which is a lookup tool for media management within CNN, and I can see any of the media on. I can pull up the low-res versions, or I can see any of the metadata associated with any of those media files. So a very highly available system up here with online and offline backups. I even have a little transaction server monitoring every single metadata transaction, so if I lost any of 4 databases, I could go back and recreate the database. So it's very, very fault tolerant. And a couple of blocks here indicating coherency managers. There are about 400 megabit pipes between the two servers, copying the media back and forth. They actually don't do a lot under normal operations. You see the scanning once a minute. You rarely see a file go back and forth unless there's been a huge glitch. And I would say in both systems right now, we've gotten to the point where those really sit in the background snoozing most of the time. So that gives you an idea of the core of the system. And sitting out on the outside here are our browse editors and clients, or our proxy editors and clients I talked about earlier, the MPEG-1 editors. And I, again, for the same reason, I map my high-res editors to one core or the other. I do the same thing with my proxy editors. I either have them on one side or the other. And then some system tools up here. I have a Windows domain controller, because this is a separate Windows domain. And I've got a system monitor, actually, for both cores. So the system monitor is an SNMP monitor for our getting information about the general health of the system. We are moving into some more advanced tools to give us a more of a dashboard look as to what how the system is behaving. Frankly, it's been very good, so it's a little bit difficult to justify developing those tools, but obviously in cases where the system's not running well, they're going to be extremely valuable to us. So we're looking at a lot of tools to give us actual stateful information about the clients on the system. One area we probably don't need that is the editors, because they're on the phone. They're a human state indicator to us, but the automated tools, we definitely need that. When we're playing back material to air, the people in the control room playing back the material, frankly, as long as it's hitting air, they don't care what server it's coming out of. They don't care what tool is behind it. They want to make sure the video is there for them. These decoders actually play out. They're simultaneously connected and are caching material from both servers when they're playing out, but they're really only playing back one stream from one server. So I want a tool that's going to tell me that, yeah, it's playing back fine on the air, but it's only playing back from one server. It's only really getting the information from here. I don't know what's caused the disconnect to the other server, but I want that stateful information available from a monitoring perspective, which the SNMP tools don't give me right now as well. So that's an area we're moving into. That was a very elementary example, but an important example, because while they are pretty reliable, and I know those systems pretty well, are going to play back from both cores. If it's not, or if it's losing its connectivity, I don't want those missing bits turning into black frames on the air. And fortunately, and we have tools that actually monitor playing out black frames on the air. Fortunately, I know the system, believe it or not, has yet to play out a black frame on the air, but I want to know if it's even got the possibility that it's going to do it, because it's not getting information from one core or the other. So, very high-level system diagram. Kind of a standard NAS plus SAN architecture, at least that's the way we looked at it, and very reliable, several levels of fault tolerance, and gave us the ability to separate the systems, operate them as individual cores on the air for software upgrades or general maintenance. We're looking at large upgrades to the system. I mentioned earlier doubling the storage capacity. I have the ability to take one of these offline and upgrade all. I'm going to physically replace all the drives. Create a new one, transfer all my media over. I'll probably do that in times that may not be perfectly ideal for some people. I'll probably do that over a weekend when the system's not being stressed as much than during a weekday, so I lower my risk, but I have the ability to upgrade the system live on the air while and not worry about disrupting the operations or operating in an environment where I could disrupt the operations. As I mentioned, the architecture, fairly simple, NAS plus SAN, extremely high-performance disk subsystem. In our business, in these servers, we look at mostly the broadcast vendors, and because they support and develop these systems, a lot of the abilities of these systems are enabled by very proprietary software for them, and they support it. They specify the disk subsystems to meet our performance specifications. So in our contract, we talk about system downtime, system availability, time back to normal, mean time between failure, and so forth. And as long as they meet those parameters, and we monitor those parameters, then the systems are usable for us. So they, you know, whether it's a Cyprico or DataDirect or whomever, EMC subsystem, our vendors pick those subsystems and support them for us. Real-time performance, huge issue for us. I won't take a shot at Windows by any means, but getting real-time performance through Windows is difficult for a lot of these manufacturers, and they've pretty well standardized on it because of several demands on them. So getting these systems to behave at scale simultaneously, like on that previous drawing, simultaneously ingesting 29 feeds, playing out 22 feeds, editing 16, soon to be 20 feeds, transferring files back and forth to Atlanta, and doing all that in real time and not playing back any black frames or having black frames appear in the edit is very important. So they're specified for that performance and designed for that peak demand, although we know we don't always use that peak demand and hope not to. Generally, no single point of failure. There are probably a couple in here. I've talked about encoders before. An encoder is a physical box sitting in the middle. Sure, I've got dual connectivity, but sitting inside that PC is one card encoding two streams of video. That one card goes, obviously, I have a single point of failure. So in areas where the incoming material is of great importance, I run on multiple encoders still, much like I did multiple tapes. And when the files are closed and I know I've got good files on the server, I delete one or the other. Two server systems, two server subsystems capable of supporting all those clients. They do that very well. They're actually designed for almost a 50% growth rate. So that's we know where we're going with the storage itself, but we can still double all our clients as well on top of that. And we're going to start tapping into that shortly. And the design spec on here was no system downtime for any upgrades of the system. So so far we've achieved all of that, primarily in New York. In terms of upgrades, the upgrades in Atlanta tend to be more hardware-based, so we do try to take the system down purposely at times where we can do that so we can get it to the scale. But the idea is when it gets to the scale of New York or beyond, that there will be no system downtime. Talked about this slide earlier, gave you an idea of the size. I think I may be going the wrong way here. Archiving. The video archive, a big issue in Atlanta, consisting of a large collection of videotapes, a lot of them deteriorating as every minute goes by, and they can only be played one more time. That one more time needs to be into the digital archive at this point. Digital successor for the archive, consisting of the hierarchical storage system. I showed you the bottom of that workflow diagram, capable of ingesting about 200 hours of video a day and transferring an estimated 280 gigabytes of data every hour. Tremendous amount of information that we're going to rely on going in and out of the system. All of this media content is used very frequently on the air. You see it every day if you watch any of our networks. And right now, it's not coming from as much of the archive as we'd like it to, but it is going to be shortly. And storage requirements for this archive are well in excess of a petabyte, and we are continuing to look at ways of growing the archive as well, because we just don't know today how many networks this is going to need to support tomorrow. So give you an idea of all of that. I'm still going the wrong way. This happens to be one of the monitoring stations in the archive here. Show you some tangibility to it. Broadcast. This has been an interesting migration. Good time to touch on this. Interesting migration of our broadcast engineering community and our IT community within our facilities. And it's been going on in the business for several years. Some of us joke, and you may remember the little green screwdrivers traded in our greenies for floppy disks a long time ago. This gives you an idea of the merging of the technologies just from a physical standpoint. All broadcast monitoring gear, but sitting behind these racks are all the archive servers as well. So what we've done is migrated from videotape very successfully in Atlanta and New York. New York to a large scale very quickly, primarily because of the move to the bigger facility. Ultimately, the scale actually will be physically larger in Atlanta when it's fully deployed, slightly physically larger. We have achieved the goal of the workflow enhancements we talked about, moving from very linear-based videotape operations to nonlinear-based editing. We've done a lot of middleware integration to other systems. Okay, I mentioned MediaSource, our external media management system. I've got this library cataloging system. I've got all the metadata sitting in this feeds edit server. That information needs to be shared amongst all these systems and amongst multiple locations, doing that through middleware. We've employed as best we could standard IT and IP-based technologies. Most of our vendors are have moved that way. And we've modified them as necessary, and our vendors typically do that for these real-time requirements for server-based ingest and edit and play out of the broadcast quality media. And workflow innovation has been tremendous. I don't want to understate that. Coming from a technical background, it gives me tremendous fulfillment in what I do in my career to see how they've adapted to it. I talked about those before, and I don't want to minimize that. The play out to air was a huge success from these servers. The ability to play commercials to air from these systems was a huge success. The ability now to edit these on standard desktop PCs is a huge success for the very simple stuff that used to tie up a very high-end editing system. You still require the people with the technical or the production knowledge behind those tools, but those tools now are enabled at their desktop, and we can deploy a lot more of them. And the system playback and reliability has exceeded our expectations to this point as well. So that's my presentation for today. I appreciate you being by. I don't know if anybody's got any questions, but maybe I can answer one or two.
Thank you. Anybody have questions? There's some mics scattered around the room. No? Going once? Going twice? Oh, there's somebody standing up with questions. Please.
And I'll hand the mic back to you.
Thanks. Well, that's a great question. We're talking about the requirements stage. We actually built these requirements with a lot of those people involved, including some of the maintenance people on the front end, because they knew they needed tools ultimately at their disposal to maintain it. I'd like to tell you it was a perfect world. It's not. In fact, I have people for training now in the New York system up in Massachusetts 6 months after it's been deployed, so it's not a perfect world. But one of the things that we did in this system was we contracted with several vendors for not only the system documentation, taking that load off our people, but they were able then to learn, gave them the time to learn when we were installing and configuring these systems. So they really learned that from the grassroots level. So updating these systems, adding clients is very simple for our front-end support people as well. I think we've made actually huge strides in the system, and I don't want to underscore the importance of it, especially coming out of a maintenance engineering background myself. But the engineers are very capable now of supporting the system. Even some of them that didn't go through the training, the specific training on the system, know from a high level how they can do it. We also published, this is something we just went through, I mentioned Lee earlier, did a training class up in New York a couple of weeks ago. We did a very large-scale triage and troubleshooting a document for these engineers and trained them all on it. So they're able to go through a drawing very similar to the system diagram I showed you, follow the workflow processes down and isolate it to certain areas very, very quickly. And that tool references a lot of other documentation, which is electronically online for them. But we try to give them the tools necessary to do it and then train them as best we can. And, I'd love to pull 14 engineers out at once and send them all to engineering or training at once, but that's just not possible. But having them, I would say one of the biggest benefits was having them involved in the planning process of the system so far back, and they certainly were. There's it. Typically, it's about 30 days. Okay, so there is a fair amount of it, but that's for what I was talking about, the video necessary to play back those pointers on the air. So a lot of the material is taken off the system a lot sooner and archived either to videotape or the digital archive, but the material that's on the system for play out there is typically 30 days, and you see that in the just watching the news, that a lot of it is replayed so frequently on the air. And then you have to deal with some of the internal games that are played. People will mark. Some people will just go mark everything, hold for release or contact so-and-so for deletion or something like that. And they'll just mark all their material like that. So, but we manage the system pretty much to hold 30 days.
Question over there.
I have a couple of questions. First of all, have you thought about adding a third core so that when you upgrade, you've still got full redundancy on your systems? It looks from the diagram that adding a third core would actually be a problem because you've only got dual inputs on a lot of your encoders and things.
Right. Actually, for some of the major upgrades, we do that, just that. We put in a temporary third core for that very reason, but it's pretty difficult to justify that on a regular basis. So we have another system in Atlanta here that we use as a development system. We'll take that offline, use that as a third core for the system. It depends on when we're doing all the changes in the system. That's a great question. Yeah, we do put in a third core at times where we know there's going to be an extended outage, like when we do these major upgrades.
The other question I have is for your archiving. You've got tapes going back 22 years ago. Are the atoms on the tapes even still readable in a lot of cases? And how do you handle being able to keep stuff in your archive forever, given the changing of media and all the rest of the stuff that's going on?
Well, the information that's in really bad shape is what's going into the archive first. And if it can't get in there for whatever reason, at that point, then, of course, a copy is made of it, at least so we have it on newer media so it's not falling apart. But then we have, of course, a generational loss as well on that media. So not a perfect scenario, but that's how we're managing it.
Okay. I'm curious about the sort of long-term archive. When you roll data out from here, what your ongoing sort of back-end storage model looks like. I mean, you've got a tremendous amount of data, a lot of metadata as well. You're not just rolling that to tape.
Well, it's going to tape, but it's going to digital tape, so 250 gigabyte or greater a digital tape.
And what's your refresh expectation for that?
For those tapes
for those
themselves?
Tapes.
I really don't know. Okay, that's an area outside my part of the expertise in this project. So I don't know if Bill's in the audience. I think he said he'd be here. That might be a good question for him, okay?
Did you want me for something?
Yeah. He's asking about the refresh of the digital tapes themselves in the digital archive. Sorry,
I don't know what the specifics are, but I know it's possible for the system to do that refresh automatically on a schedule where it will, copy the data from one tape to another to make sure that no individual tape will wear out over time. It's your typical sort of hierarchical storage management system where the system itself manages the migration of data between different types of media. You know, they've got the disks in front of the tapes so that the stuff that's been accessed recently is cached on disk, so on and so forth. You know, typical HSM thing. I don't know if that answers your question or not, but I guess it did.
Yeah. Thanks, Bill.
Can you discuss how much all of this costs? And more and more importantly, this seems like one of those projects that could have been killed by a bunch of bean counters saying, well, we need the ROI, because really, I don't know if that can be calculated. You're really calculating the cost of not doing this as a competitive loss. Actually, did you have that kind of challenge?
Yeah, absolutely. And it wasn't my specific challenge. It was done by some folks on our team, certainly. Yes, the project was largely funded on the two items specifically you mentioned. You have an intangible competitive advantage component that you can parallel to some specific costs and ROI, as well specifically on just tape itself, let alone tape storage and tape machines and tape maintenance and tape parts. As well. In terms of budget, I really can't disclose the amount of money we spent on it. I can tell you it didn't grow out of control. It did grow as the requirements grow. It's still growing. I'm going back to a meeting where it's going to grow today some more. But one of the things without question is the cost improvements. Obviously, the cost going down in a lot of the hardware itself has helped us a lot. So, tens of millions of dollars, no question about that, but that's about all I can really say.
Thank you.
Now, one thing about your talk I found very fascinating is that you said this is Windows-based.
Say again, within?
Windows, Microsoft technology,
yes.
And you don't reboot these machines?
I'm sorry, I'm having a hard time here.
Oh, and you say you never reboot these machines?
Never remove these machines? No, I didn't mean to indicate that.
Okay, that clears it up. Thank you.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Enjoy the rest of the conference.